Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Why must it always be brother against brother? Why? If I'm addressing anyone, I'll say their name. Come on, y'all. Don't listen to the false narratives. Let people live their lives. It's just a game. Talk about the art. Talk about the sport. You talk openly. You talk freely. But because we live in a clickbait society, it becomes something bigger. You don't have to defend it. That's just what media is. It's entertainment.
It was just entertainment, guys. Kyrie says we all took his comments out of context yesterday because we are indeed a part of a clickbait society. Matt, what did you make of what Kyrie said about collectively coaching the Nets and also that KD is the first time he has ever had someone on his team that he felt he could pass the ball to in the clutch, because before that, he was the best clutch option on every team he had played on?
I think every once in a while he just says stuff for attention. Just the only difference, and a lot of people in the world do that. The only difference is he's a superstar. So when he says stuff, obviously it's going to make headlines. Whether he was taking a shot, a direct shot of LeBron or not, I mean, only he knows that. But, you know, he does this every once in a while, and everyone goes crazy with it. And we got to kind of take him by his word. You know, was he taking a shot? I don't know. It seemed low-key like he was, but, hey, that's what Kyrie does.
Yeah, look, my thing is this. Matt, you host a podcast. I host a podcast. And a lot of times when we get people on our podcast, we say this: hey, talk freely. We're going to talk it out. We're going to just going to say whatever. And then we go back and I'm going to edit out anything. I've had Kyrie on my podcast multiple times. And then like later that day, I'm like, hey, I took out that part and I took out that part just because we don't want any drama. The issue with this is you went on Kevin Durant's podcast and you were saying these things. So we in the media are not creating the clickbait.
Right.
Like you and Kevin Durant are creating the clickbait. That's the only issue with that. And like, I've protected guests. I'm pretty sure, Matt, you have protected guests. Like, hey, we're going to talk for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. Anything that might be a little too off center, we're going to take out. And then we just want people to focus on the content. And so you have to be able to have someone look at this. And we've all often offered the content like, here, listen to this. Make sure everything is cool before we put this out. So that's my only issue, is that a lot of times you protect guests, but he can't say that this is just clickbait when he's creating the content that is allowing for the clickbait. Then coming on is like, oh, you guys are just in the clickbait clickbait world. That's the only part where it's hard for me to defend.
And he knows what he's doing. He absolutely knows what he's doing.
He's way too intelligent.
Too smart for this.
Way too intelligent.
And also, I think that there's a middle ground here too, right, guys? That when he said, oh, I wasn't taking a shot. If I wanted to take a shot at LeBron, I would have named him. Of course, he didn't name him there. But if I want to take a shot at someone, I would have named him. There is a difference between, hey, I'm going out and taking shots at LeBron and all of that, and then the other end of the spectrum of being respectful of your former teammates by saying, there's no context for this, by saying on the podcast, hey, there has never before been a better option in the clutch than me. That's a statement in and of itself. There's no context you need around
that. And that's fine. That's 100% fine. I'm okay with you believing that you are the best guy.
But it is what it is. That I take issue with the whole, like, I feel like out of context is sort of the throwaway line when someone says something that then they realize doesn't land as successfully as they might have liked it to. Yeah. There is not extra context around that. He said the thing. He said all of it.
Let me settle this right now. If LeBron James were to get up on a podium today and say that Anthony Davis is the best teammate I've ever had, like, he's, I don't want to say taking shots, but the first people they're going to talk about is D-Wade and Kyrie and Chris Bosh and Kevin Love. Those are the guys that are going to be like, hey, this is what he said, and it's going to make news. So it's not just like we're like looking to get on Kyrie, but Kyrie, if Bron were to say that, everyone, if he was like, oh, this is the best teammate I've ever had, he's the best player I've ever played with, the first thing they would do is like, Kai, like, you hear this. Or they would go to D-Wade, like, yo, D-Wade had a finals MVP before this. So all of a sudden, that's not clickbait. That's just like putting stuff out there that people are going to address with the right amount of attention.
If one of you got up here and said, this kid is my favorite son, as opposed to the other kids.
I've done that often.
I'm just saying.
No, like I said, I have no issue with what Kyrie's feeling. He's the best option in the clutch because he is a clutch player. KD is a clutch player. I think the fact that he brought KD into the equation, knowing that he's played with LeBron James in the past, like I said, he knew what he was doing when he said that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, again, welcome into The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am obviously here with Richard Jefferson and Matt Barnes, NBA champions. Coming up, we're going to have a lot of NBA Finals talk. We will also discuss Doc's reported deal to be the next coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. How good a fit is he with Embiid and Simmons? We will talk about that. First, though, tonight, the Miami Heat looking to even the series after getting blown out in Game 1. Yesterday, I sat down with Jimmy Butler, who is, as always, confident. Check out our conversation. So right now, you are the picture of cool. You showed up to this interview in slippers. But I want to know what you were like in the hours after Game 1 when you got back to the hotel.
Obviously we lost, so that's never a good thing. But there are good things that you can take from a loss, knowing that we didn't rebound. We didn't do a lot of things that we said we were going to do. We didn't make the miss. We didn't get back. So knowing that if we correct those things, we'll be in a much better position to win.
Do you stay up and start watching the tape already
night? You watch the film, you break it down, how I can be better, how I can get everybody involved more, knowing where everybody's supposed to be on the floor. I think there was just a lot of nerves for me as well.
Really?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's my first time being here, and you want to win. I think now we've all settled down. We've all come to know, like, we're supposed to be here. We belong here.
I know that you don't ever see injuries as an excuse, but they're real. They're not pretend. The Heat are listing Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo as doubtful for Game 2. Goran's been your leading scorer in the playoffs. What difference is that going to make?
A huge difference. But, I mean, to put it in the most simple way possible, who cares? We're still expected to win. You know, we need those guys. Don't ever get me wrong. We definitely need those guys. But if they're not playing and we lose, are we 1-1? No. We're still down 0-2. So as much as we do need those guys and as much as I do want those guys to be out there competing with us, we're still expected to win. We got to get it to 1-1.
You rolled your ankle pretty hard yourself. You were limping for a while. When you woke up, what did it feel like?
Who cares? Nobody cares.
I care. I'm asking you the question.
And I appreciate that.
I care deeply, Jimmy.
Thank you. But nobody cares. I got to be ready to go. I have to do a lot more on both ends of the floor, which I will be prepared to do. And I gotta make sure that we win in any way, shape, or form. I gotta make sure that we win.
When we look at the X's and O's of the next game, are we gonna see your fingerprints more on every possession?
I think so. I gotta be able to do more. I gotta impact the game a lot more than I ever have before. Right now, in the next 4 wins for us, we have to play damn near perfect basketball, but we're going to have to impact the game in so many more ways.
I want to ask you about a quote, and I want to use your phrase. You said that people have this perception that you are, quote, a bad guy. You said, I like it that way. It doesn't bother me. It's not like I'm reading everything that's on the internet. I know who I am. I'm cool. I'm content with that. And that's where I'll leave it. I knew the type of structure I wanted and needed, and it was Miami. So you felt good about the way you handled your business the
of
whole
course.
Time.
If you're in the trenches with me, if you go to war with me, you know I'm doing whatever it takes to win. And it may not come off the best way, but at the end of the day, when we win a championship, you're going to be like, you wanted to win. That's one thing that you cannot put past them.
I also heard you say this week, I'm more comfortable with myself than I was before I got to Miami. What has your evolution there been?
Just growing, knowing that these guys, this organization has so much belief in me to lead them. And knowing that I'm going to try to do right by everybody and make sure that everybody's comfortable, make sure nobody's worried, and that we're just playing carefree and just having fun. And that everybody gets to be themselves, including me. I think that's the best part. That's why I can wake up smiling. That's why I can wake up knowing everything's going to be okay and that we're going to win.
Now, through this whole bubble experience, you have very famously become a coffee entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. When you and I sat down right at the beginning of the bubble, you said you had the pour over.
There we go.
You were charging your teammates already then, $20 a coffee, but it has grown, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. You do cappuccinos, you do lattes, you call your company Big Face Coffee, you have merchandise now. A few doors down in the hotel, one of the athletic trainers has started Little Face Coffee. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a business you will do for real once you leave the bubble?
Without a doubt, without a doubt. I don't know how soon, how long it'll take, but yeah, I really enjoy it. Right now it's a way to like calm my mind, take my mind away from basketball for a little bit. But after my career, I think I'm throwing this into the wine category. Like I really want to do this coffee thing because I love it. I enjoy it and it makes me smile. So as long as I'm happy, coffee's a part of it.
Can you charge the American public $20 a cup?
I can. I don't think that I will. I can, but I don't think that I will.
All right, last question. Are the Miami Heat winning game two?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did I know you were going to say that?
I mean, you just know me oh so well, Rach. Oh so well.
This man does not lack confidence. We do all know him so well. Game two is tonight. Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo still listed as doubtful, but Jimmy Butler, as you heard him there, fully expected to play. Now, he did, of course, hurt the ankle. That was just before halftime of game one, then tweaked it again in the fourth quarter. But if you look at how he was playing before that initial, just before halftime injury, he had 16 points in the first half. So, Matt, what are your expectations for Jimmy Butler tonight?
I think why Jimmy's been so successful on this team because he can kind of sit back and survey and see where this team needs him, and he's easily can plug himself into that situation. He hasn't been asked to go out and score 30 every night. Tonight is going to be different. Goran's leading them in the playoffs and scoring. Bam's a double-double machine. If you don't have either one of those players, he's definitely going to have to be much more assertive on the offensive end and look to score more, but at the same time get his other sharpshooters going and hopefully find a guy that we're not expecting to have a big game, because obviously they're up against Goliath, and if it's going to be shorthanded, it's going to be a tall feat.
I feel like we need to put big question marks over the two guys on the side of that graph, on either side of that graph, Rick Richard.
Yeah, well, you said, he said they're going against Goliath. They're going against Goliaths. There's multiple Goliaths, plurals, on that other side. Even a guy like JaVale McGee, who didn't play, is a huge part of what the Lakers have done all year long. You know, my issue is this. You lose your leading scorer. Let's say, hypothetically, these guys aren't able to go. You use your leading scorer, you're a leading rebounder, you're a leading assist guy. Now, I'm not here to like give anybody bad news, right? I hate giving good people bad news, but Miami Heat fans, like, this is going to be very difficult. The good news is this. Jimmy Butler is one of the grittiest players that I have seen in the last, I don't know, 10 to 15 years. When they talk about different eras, I look at Jimmy Butler as a player that could play in any era. It didn't matter if it was the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s now. He just has that mentality, that grit, that focus. So he might not be your most important player. I think Bam Adebayo is your most important player, but I think Jimmy's your best player. And if your best player is on the floor and you have an Eric Spoelstra and a Miami Heat type organization, there's always a chance. That's the good news. But the chance is very, very slim.
I would have loved to have seen a Matt Barnes, Jimmy Butler combo on a team when talking about eras and things like that. I feel you two, Matt, would have a good meeting of the minds.
I had JJ on my podcast yesterday, and he spoke so highly of Jimmy. You know, and JJ and our good friends played together for several years. So I would have definitely embraced that conversation. Jimmy's one of my favorite blue collar superstars I think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, I want to switch gears, though, because Doc Rivers, not on the open market for long, guys. He has reached a five-year deal to be the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, according to Woj.
This you don't see those often.
Nope. Yeah, well, you're going to hire the guy. You got to pay him. Yeah. 3 days after Doc and the Clippers parted ways, Joel Embiid reacted to the news yesterday by tweeting, "Welcome to the city of brotherly love, Coach Doc Rivers, excited for the future and what we are bringing and building here, Philly forever." I saw Ramona Shelburne reporting that they'd actually spoken before Doc was actually offered the job, so that's a good sign as well that they're going into that with full cooperation. What kind of difference can he make in Philly?
When you look at what's going on in Philly, the team that they had the year before, let's not even just talk about Jimmy Butler. Let's talk about Ilya Sova. Let's talk about Marco Bellinelli. Let's talk about J.J. Redick. They are lacking so much from the team that was a shot away from going to the conference finals. And when you strip away all of that talent and then you say, like, oh, well, the Philadelphia 76ers underachieved. No, they lost about 25% of their total talent. So they need to restructure this team and figure out a way to get some of that talent back on that roster if you really want them to accomplish what their goals are.
Yes, they've made some terrible personnel moves over the last handful of years. Obviously being a shot away from going to the finals, but then completely getting rid of all your key shooters. But one thing I will say about Doc is a great motivational coach, and I think that's what Embiid is going to need, is someone's going to really going to motivate him and believe in him. I'm going to be interested to see what he's going to be able to do with Ben. Is Ben going to be his point guard? Is Ben going to be his power forward? And to me, the biggest key is Tobias Harris had a great season with Doc Rivers right before he left the Clippers. Can they get something more out of Tobias Harris, considering he's their highest paid player? They're locked into him long term. They really need more out of Tobias Harris. So if Doc can bring that out of him, that's going to be a great sign. But like Richard said, they need to do some fixing of this lineup. They need to add more shooting to complement their core three stars.
The question of everybody asking, can Joel and Ben play together, has been the wrong question to me for a long time. I mean, obviously, it's obvious. They're not the best fit ever. But they have played well together in the past when the rest of the roster around them was different,
yes,
as you guys point out. The numbers are the numbers. You can just see it. You can see it on tape when you watch it. And I do think that's such a good point, Matt, about Doc trying to maximize Tobias Harris. The Sixers' investment in Tobias Harris overall has been kind of astounding in its scope. What they gave up to trade for him was enormous, and then basically choosing between him and Jimmy Butler, which is what they did this past offseason. So they have put their chips into the Tobias Harris game, and they are definitely betting that Doc Rivers can be the one to bring him back to the guy, frankly, that they traded for, the guy who was playing for Doc with the Clippers. So we will see. All right, coming up next, we will be joined by future Hall of Famer Chris Bosh, coming back to the show. Chris, of course, a two-time title winner in Miami. We will ask him how confident he is in the Heat's chances of beating the Lakers in these finals. Richard, you painted a very sad picture earlier. Maybe Chris can cheer Heat fans up. We'll see.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything. This week on The Neighborhood.
Every week it's the same thing.
Every week.
Hey! You mow my lawn? How about I mow your lawn?
You touch my lawn and I'll defrost your car every morning.
You defrost my car and I'm gonna trim your sugar maples.
Somebody say theme sugar maples?
I can help with that.
Oops.
NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC, brought to you by State Farm.
Chris Bosh, you got to feel like the luckiest big man in the world right now.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I got LeBron on my left, and I have D-Wade on my right.
Bosh flies in and slams it home. What a play by Bosh. Oh, yes, he did it. He did it. Blocked by Bosh.
There's no replacing a player like Chris Bosh.
What a play by a shot by Chris Bosh.
That's right.
Ah! Oh, big shot by Bosh. Got it. Miami wins. Let the coronation begin.
They're ready to celebrate here in Miami.
We are now thrilled to welcome in that man you just watched on your screen, the future Hall of Famer, two-time champion with the Miami Heat, Mr. Chris Bosh. It is always so nice to have you back on the show, friend.
Oh, great to be here, always. I watch you guys every day.
I don't appreciate the first highlight of him of his clip of is him dunking on me. I didn't appreciate that. I'm gonna have to talk to whoever set that audio and that video up.
Hey, man, we'll let you guys work that out. That was great. That was a big game, man.
We'll let y'all work that out in the commercial break. Right now, I do want to ask you, Chris, the Heat are, I mean, look, it felt like a huge game one, but you know better than anyone. In the standings, it only counts as one game. The problem I think a lot of people are trying to wrap their heads around is the injury concerns going forward. Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo still being listed as doubtful for tonight. How confident are you that the Heat could win four of the next six games, especially if one or both of those guys is not able to return?
Well, I mean, I think when you're in a situation like that, you hate to get to this far and have to deal with injuries. And I think if you're the Heat, you just want to get one game. All your focus has to be on the game preparation for tonight. You can't really worry too much about the outside noise and what's going on, or really even paying attention to your injuries. They're going to have to pretty much put their lineup together and go all in with what they have. And me knowing Eric Spoelstra, he's going to try and thrive in this situation. He's going to pump that into his team. And the philosophy of the next man up, this is going to be the ultimate test for him. So hopefully they've been working on those things all season. And, you know, like I said, game two is coming up, and you don't make it this far just to lose.
I think people underestimate how much luck goes into winning a championship, Chris. I think we saw a perfect example last year of Golden State getting there and then dropping like flies. Unfortunately, we're seeing the same thing now in the finals with Miami. But it takes, obviously, it takes a lot of skill and preparation, but it takes a lot of luck to be able to stay healthy through this entire run, because obviously this year has been a much different run than runs in the past.
Yeah, and luck, that's a great way to talk about it.
No, for sure. And I didn't realize you have to be lucky until actually, you know, being able to win a championship. I mean, you know, we're always tough and critical of the guys or the teams that didn't get it done. But when you're in that position, you understand how many things have to go right. And just to allude kind of what Matt was saying, too, you'll get all the way there. And just like we saw last year, KD can't help that his Achilles tendon snapped. Then Klay Thompson can't help that he landed awkwardly. Is it mental fatigue? Is it actual physical fatigue? You'll never really know. But, you know, all in all, these injuries happen. They're a part of the game. And I think if you're the Heat right now, you've really got to find a way to get things done.
And by the way, it's not just luck with injuries also, right? So you guys know, you both have rings. Like, you know that it's a one play here, it's one play there. So I don't love the when people are like, oh, the Raptors just got lucky. And by the way, if the Lakers win, they won't just get lucky. They did so much work to get here. But the fact you said it exactly right. There is luck, Matt, in every single aspect of what goes on here. And it's not just injuries, it's everything. But it is partly injuries in the last two finals, for sure.
Absolutely. Chris, what's the biggest difference you've seen in the Heat, LeBron, and LeBron in L.A. with the Lakers?
Well, I think what's evident this year with LeBron is him taking the challenge and being the point guard, which I always liked that position for him. I always asked him to play point guard when he was with the Heat, but he did it in limited minutes. I think this time taking on the full-time role of being in charge of getting the offense in rhythm and distributing at the same time, not only doing that, but exceeding expectations and leading the league in assists on a championship team. You know, it's great to see him continue to evolve his game. And I think that's been the biggest thing. I've never seen him defer so much to another player to get the offensive rhythm for the team going. I mean, they really feed AD. And, you know, they know that he's a, you know, huge weapon for him. They know no one can guard him, and he's always going to put pressure on defenses. So just to kind of see LeBron be able to put out a high outlet, score a lot of points, but still dish out 11 or 12 assists a night, it's impressive.
Chris, I'm so interested that you said you had those conversations even back when you played together. I know Eric Spoelstra sort of was pushing that positionless basketball before almost anyone else in the league. What were the talks you guys had about that?
Well, I mean, you know, just really preparing for different teams. And I mean, when you have a player as great as him, he makes the game easy for you. That's one thing that he doesn't get enough credit for. Unless you play with him, you don't understand how much easier he makes the game, how much better he makes each of his teammates. And that's from the first guy to the 15th guy at the end of the bench. But, you know, just the fact that he's able to see over the defense, the fact that he's able to know the game plan and be able to recall things. And with his height advantage, he can always tell, you know, when this player needs the ball or that player needs the ball. So, you know, he was that guy to find me. He could see that look on my face sometimes if I wanted to get more involved, and he would make sure he gives me a great pass.
Well, look, I was going to say that you got him in the prime of his prime, but I mean, I don't know when the prime of his career ends.
This is
really
the longest prime I've ever seen. This guy's been in his prime since he stepped in the league 17 years ago. So we've been blessed to be able to see this run, because I don't know if we'll ever see someone of this caliber play at this level for as long as he possibly has.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, we got to take a very quick break, but you're going to stick with us. Everyone out there in TV land, stick around as well. Coming up, we're playing our favorite game, What Were You Thinking? With the only one who can answer these questions, Mr. Chris Bosh.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome back to The Jump. Indeed, Chris Bosh still in the house alongside myself and Matt Barnes. And it is time on The Jump to run it back to the top plays from the Miami Heat's championship era. Number five, LeBron's block on Thiago Splitter. This is 2013.
Unbelievable block. He's had some of the most memorable blocks in finals history between this and Iguodala.
Look at that face afterward. Chris, you know that face.
Yeah, that's Kyle. That was a good game. I mean, our backs were against the wall in game one, and we had to win that game. So that was like, okay, we're going to win this game.
Number four, this absurd full court oop from Dwayne Wade in 2011.
Was that during the regular season? That's in the playoffs?
Regular season one.
Regular season, yeah. That's why I remember them doing all that stuff. They started doing crazy stuff. That was,
right?
I remember just being amazed. I didn't know things like that could actually happen.
When you're just waiting, you're spending 6 months waiting for the playoffs. You guys have to, you know, pass the time somehow.
Yeah, you got to make it interesting.
All right, I know you remember this one. LeBron on Jet.
Oh, boy.
I think, you know, LeBron had a little extra there because it was Jason Terry, right?
Yeah, of course, man. That was, yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one. That was a fun game. We were coming back in that game. I remember still trying to come back. You know, we were still down at that point, but that kind of fueled sustained the comeback.
Jason did a lot of talking after they beat you in 2011, so a little revenge there. Number two, Dwayne Wade on Perk, 2011.
Oh, yeah.
Perk. But you know Perk is watching too.
Bash.
Perk, you gotta jump, baby.
Yeah, that's nice.
Dwayne.
Ooh. Lord.
That is nice.
I don't know if you can quite jump that high now, but still. 2013, number one of the biggest rebounds in NBA history. You finding Ray Allen then. Sending the game into overtime, and that was the end of the San Antonio Spurs that year. And I talk about this rebound all the time, Chris. Just can you go through what you were seeing in that moment?
No, not really. I just saw the ball. I was able to see the whole flight of the ball. And as a rebounder, if you can see the flight, you can kind of anticipate where it's going. It kind of happened in slow motion for me, so I saw Manu down there first, and then I saw Ray backing up, calling me. So, I mean, I'm not going to dribble. I'm not going to shoot it. I'm going to pass it to Ray.
Game-saving block on that one, too, by the way. I just want to point that out.
Oh, appreciate that. Hey,
right?
Hey, appreciate
that.
That's what's up. That's why I like you guys.
Takes everyone though, and that is what's so amazing is sometimes it's just like one shot or something that kind of goes down as the symbol for a particular finals, but you know how many things along the way there are that have to get you to that. And it was, I love watching all those highlights. Just you guys were a fun circus there on the basketball court for a long time. It was pretty great. Earlier this week, Eric Spoelstra discussed the big plans Miami had for the season though after LeBron went back to Cleveland. Take a listen to him talking about you, Chris.
We really thought that we had a championship contending team that next year. That's how we approached it. However, it's irrelevant what anybody else thought. We knew who we were losing. But when we made that midseason trade for Gorn, we made a promise to him that we would be competing for titles. It was just so unfortunate that CB wasn't able to finish the season.
Chris, I mean, most people forget how well you were playing before you were forced to sit out for those blood clots for the first time in February of 2015. And I remember so distinctly talking to you at the All-Star game. You were there. I mean, what changes in NBA history if you are able to finish that 2015 season?
Well, I mean, you know, in my mind, I would like to think that, you know, hopefully we'd be champions. You know, bringing another championship to Miami was always our goal. But that team in particular right there, I felt, and me and Pat, I had a conversation with Pat a few weeks ago, just about, you know, just talking about what ifs and stuff like that. Yep. But that year around All-Star break, when, you know, right before I wasn't able to play anymore, we felt pretty good. We were kind of looking around. We were around second or third in the East. We knew we had a shot. LeBron and those guys were playing well. But we were looking around the league just saying, man, we got a pretty good team. And, you know, with me and Dwayne leading that team, we knew that all you need is a shot. You know, it's hard enough to get there. If you can get there, you know, you can stack your cards up and see how you fare then. But, you know, as far as getting there, we were super, super confident that we would definitely have a shot to bring another title back to Miami. But, you know, it just wasn't so.
Chris, I got a question. What would have happened if you stayed healthy and you guys saw LeBron in the playoffs?
That was, dude, I'm gonna tell you, my dream that season, we were looking around in that offseason. I said, man, as things were kind of, you see which teams are which, I said, man, I would love to play in Toronto for the playoffs one more time. And I would love to play LeBron James to go to the finals.
Oh,
man. You know, just like a little Big Three reunion on different teams. That would have been a lot of fun. But, you know, we just didn't get to see it happen. It's just one of those things, man, that keep me up at night still to this day.
Well, look, the fact that the Miami Heat as an organization, even after you had to step away, never tanked. The fact that the attitude was, as we just heard Spo say, as we're hearing you say, no, we could win it. We could beat LeBron's Cavaliers. We absolutely think we can. I think that's part of the reason why they were a fifth seed this year and playing in the NBA Finals now, because of that attitude. And it's why I have at least a little bit of faith that we could still get a really competitive series here, because the culture of that team isn't, hey, we don't have stars, so we're never going to win. That just isn't something that they believe in Miami. So even if Goran and maybe Bam aren't able to play for a couple games the rest of the series, the thought process won't be, hey, there's no use even competing, because they've never acted that way. I do want to get to America's favorite game. I know it is. You know it is. What were you thinking, Chris Bosh? So I just want to know what's going through your head. First question, what were you thinking when you buried the Portland Trail Blazers with 0.5 seconds on the clock?
Let me see. I can't. Oh, yeah, this shot. Yo, so it was this dude talking a lot of crap to me, this fan. And I knew in the game I wanted, we had run that play before. And I just slipped the screen when Dwayne, if you look at that pass, Dwayne threw a crazy pass back to me. I said, yo, I'm going to be back there for three. And he threw that crazy pass, but I just knew. I said, I'm just going to shoot it. I'm not really thinking about anything else.
Right. Wait, move.
I'm telling you, we have a producer on our staff, producer Bob Murr, who is a Portland diehard, and I just want to tell you that he was at the game and you broke his heart, Chris. You just did. So I'm sorry.
It happens.
Next up, what were you thinking, Chris Bosh, when Carlos Boozer fouled you? This is from 2011. Booze makes What's a move, and let's just say maybe you embellished a little bit, Chris.
I'm so glad this one's being shown. So what happened with that, I had my nose broken. That was around November, December. I broke my nose. The last game I played as a Raptor in Cleveland.
Okay.
I broke my nose, the bridge of my nose. I don't know if booze grazed me or I felt wind, but I felt that and I jumped back. And I think you felt man, when I hit the ground, I said, man, is my nose broken? That's all I was thinking about.
I think you
felt if you see me, yeah, if you see me, I check my nose a little bit. I'm like, okay. Then they called the foul and everybody was booing and stuff. I said, yo, they called that a foul? I'll take it. But they were giving me a lot of flack for flopping. If you would have broke your nose or had your nose broken, you would have jumped back too.
Chris Bosh, what were you thinking when Paul Pierce led with his knee in 2009? Pierce driving down the lane, raises his knee and hits you, I'm just going to say, below the belt.
Ooh. Yeah. That's a flagrant two nowadays. You know what? To be honest with you, I was trying to make a play. Paul made a better one. And, you know, I just know what I felt. And all I remember was hearing the boom. You know, you don't really see it when you get knocked on like that, you know? So all I heard was the noise and Paul standing over me. And I just remember like being so mad, just like, I can't believe he made that and kneed me in the nuts at the same time.
Multitasking.
Well, yes, you gotta give it to Paul. That's impressive. It takes talent.
In the end, that era of the Heat got the better of that era of the Celtics. So that's all you have to remember. Your revenge. Chris Bosh, thank you so, so much for joining us. Eric Spoelstra has been saying that you have been such an important part of the Miami Heat Nation presence leading out there in the nation since not as many people can be here in person. Come back soon, friend. We'll see you down the road.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Good to see you guys.
Have a good one, Chris.
And here's what The Jump recommends for today. Mark Spears of The Undefeated has a piece up on Byron Spruell, who he calls, quote, the architect of the bubble. Spruell, the league's president of operations, third on the NBA org chart, he is going to join us in the next segment to discuss the success of this year bubble we're in, Rick. Game two of the NBA Finals tonight, 9 Eastern on ABC, ESPN Deportes, and the app. Our coverage starts with NBA Countdown 8:30. I will be on the sidelines for this game. Come hang out. And our next guest here on The Jump, the NBA president of league operations, Byron Spruell, a repeat guest on our show. Welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back.
Look, I love the undefeated Mark Spears. We talked about it right before the break, called you the architect of the bubble. Did you imagine that it would have this level of success when you had your roughly 1,006 meetings planning it out?
No. I mean, a lot of expectations went into it, but ultimately the way it played out in terms of the phenomenal play on the court and seeing all the protocols that we have in place actually work too. I think for all those reasons, and Mark used the word architect, but really there's a whole team of people, whether it's Dave Weiss on the medical side, whether it's Kelly Flato on the event side, Evan Wash on the structure and format, and then Sarah Zuckert on the broadcast element. That team of folks are really the MVPs in my view, because that's what all pulled it together to make it an effective way to get back to the court and play some outstanding basketball.
Yeah, well, I'm going to keep using the term architect, just because it makes you uncomfortable. But my favorite thing about this bubble was the play-in games. The play-in games, the opportunity for, you know, teams to get that last postseason spot. Now, obviously, these were unique circumstances to give some teams an opportunity, and Portland was a team that was able to accomplish it. But is that something that's here to stay? Because I think fans liked it. I even think players liked it. They liked that opportunity that if you were injured or if you had some things, you still had one more last push. Is that something we can see more of?
Richard, we love the element, and it played out really well here in the bubble. But I wouldn't say yet it's here to stay. We're going to always look at the data, look at the analysis behind it, and see how it really played out. You know, a couple years ago, we actually looked at the future of the game, and the play-in tournament was an element of that, along with the midseason tournament, potential reseeding.
Yeah.
So to see it come back in this sort of frame in the bubble was great, and the way it played out was wonderful. But we're still going to look at the data. You know, Adam and Mark always tell us, let's look at
the information
to make sure we have the ability to back it up and stand it up. But, you know, it played out well here. We hope to see it more in the future.
That's awesome.
Byron, when the Bucks decided not to play shortly after the shooting of Jacob Blake, being the highest ranking official in the bubble, what was your immediate thoughts?
Well, it was twofold. As the clock started winding down and Orlando was on the court, we get the call or some signals that the Bucks weren't coming out. So we went right back, got Adam and Mark on the phone, and really started to talk to them too. So John Horst and Coach Bud allowed us into the locker room just to talk. And on one side of it, as an African-American male, I got what they where they were coming from,
right.
In terms of frustration and a little bit of anger, maybe some hidden optimism in a way. But on the other side of it, we had a game to play.
Right.
And so talking to them and really understanding the situation, I thought it was really effective for them to essentially use that game time and work through the organization to visit with the lieutenant governor, to visit with the attorney general, and actually make a statement. And then certainly from that, coming out of the locker room, they created a pause and created a stoppage that was really effective. And then to have the next few days where people did get a chance to rest, but also reflect on what we could do on this platform, even more so if we continued, was just powerful. And certainly a lot of stakeholders in that, the Players Association with Michelle and Chris Paul, our governors, Adam and Mark's leadership, just tremendous. And so there was so much that went into that moment that I thought from the standpoint of taking true advantage of it and the platform we have, the brand of the NBA, the legacy of it, just meant a whole lot for us to continue. And now thinking about it, to be able to finish and complete the mission with the finals, game two tonight, it's just a proud moment for the organization.
Yeah, it's going to go down as a moment. The NBA took a stand and meant something. And
absolutely.
I will say, you list off all the people involved. I will add and say that having you at the fulcrum all of that was so important. You have such a wide breadth of experience. We've talked about it the last other time you were on the show. You've been in so many different situations. You can speak to so many groups of people and feel like they have a champion in you. And
well,
it's been
you.
A huge part of the success of the bubble. So thank you.
Oh, Byron. Thank you, Rachel.
Great
we
job.
All really appreciate it.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For
Thanks,
joining
Matt.
Us.
Thank you.
We will
Thanks,
be right Rachel. Back with a little bit more of The Jump up next. Stick around, friends. We're going to talk about tonight's game. 7 days a week is game seven on me. Life a test, you
out. You live through that. That's test. The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything.
The best of five WNBA finals begin tonight, 7 Eastern, ESPN2, and the app. Breonna Stewart and the Storm taking on league MVP Asia Wilson and the Aces. It's time for this week's Ultra Moment, brought to you by Michelob Ultra.
Now it goes, and my goodness, what a basket! Jamal Murray, how'd he get that one to go?
Look at him go up. No, I'm not going to dunk, not going to use it with my left, but
English. Lost it, picked up by Smart, ahead to Tatum. Tatum goes up, he's fouled. Layup counted at one. And the Celtics pouring it on with 3:24 remaining. They have an 18-point lead. And he'll settle for the two and can't get the follow, but that is Howard with a follow and the foul. Dwight Howard with another big board and another big follow jam.
10 seconds left on our show. Matt Barnes, who you got for tonight?
Lakers.
What about you, Richard?
The Lakers.
We'll see. See you after the weekend.